compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning, and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Great to be here with you. And if you're an old timer, you know that my number is 888-914-9149. If you're a regular, give me a call. I'd love to talk to you. You don't have to be a regular to give me a call. If this is the first time you're ever listening to the program and you're saying, what is this show about? Well, we talk about a lot of different things. We get into a lot of different issues, and some of them are driven by you, the things that you call and want to talk about. So as I like to say, if you need a second opinion, or maybe you've heard something that you'd like sorted out, or you have an objection, or whatever it may be, I'm here for you, and I'd love to hear from you, and my number is 888-914-9149. Texas, the great state of Texas, has done something great again. They have passed a law that effectively outlaws abortion. Now, what I want to do is share with you this story from two different vantage points. I want you to listen to the way it's being reported in the secular, obviously not pro-life press, in which case we'll be looking at an article from NBC News. And then I want to share with you the way it's being reported on the pro-life side of things. And you'll notice different emphases and different little things that are put in, especially on the liberal side of things. So here is how it's being reported by NBC News. And this is an article written by Chloe Atkins. Headline, Texas abortion clinics turning away patients as strict new law takes effect. Right from the get-go, they're going to be negative about it. So here she says, some Texas abortion clinics were already turning patients away even before the state's harsh new abortion law went into effect at midnight. Which do you think is harsher? A law that said, this is me speaking, do you think that it's harsher to pass a law saying don't kill unborn babies? Or if you don't like the word baby, you can call it a fetus. If you don't like the word fetus, call it a clump of cells, whatever you want to call it. Which is harsher, a law that acts to protect them or the killing of an unborn baby? So the way it's being reported in the mainstream press, a la NBC News, the law is harsh. Since mid-August, all 11 of Planned Parenthood's health centers in Texas that provide abortion services have stopped scheduling visits after September the 1st for abortions past 6 weeks of pregnancy. Planned Parenthood's decision was prompted by... Can we get some Planned Parenthood background music, please? I'd like to set the mood if we're going to talk about Planned Parenthood, just softly in the background, just to get everybody in the mood for this story. Softly, softly, softly. Planned Parenthood's decision was prompted by a law known as SB 8, which bans abortions in Texas as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. So that's the Planned Parenthood theme music. That's the mood music, if you want to understand. Okay, that's enough. I just... Thank you, Cyrus. Thank you. The vast majority of people who obtain an abortion in Texas, they can't bring themselves to say women anymore. The vast majority of people, NBC News says, who obtain an abortion in Texas are at least 6 weeks pregnant. As a result, the law would prohibit nearly all abortions in the state, according to Planned Parenthood and Whole Woman's Health. But unlike other states' anti-abortion laws, Texas's ban bars state officials from enforcing it and instead allows individuals to sue an abortion provider or anyone who may have helped someone to get an abortion after the limit and seek financial damages of up to $10,000 per defendant. Without relief starting tomorrow, this is according to Alexis McGill Johnson, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. She says, without relief starting tomorrow, 7 million Texas women of reproductive age will lose access to abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, forcing those seeking to end their pregnancy to travel hundreds of miles out of state for their abortion if they can afford to do so. Notice that she says women. She says, this unconstitutional law is a full-scale assault on patients, their health care providers, and their support systems. And it just goes on from there. So this is the tenor, the tone of this reportage, and it's similar in CNN and the other mainstream outlets, and that's how they're portraying it. So here's how it's being portrayed, and as you might guess, I am more partial to this portrayal. This is from Live Action. Bridget Silicki is the author of this article. The nation's strongest pro-life law will take effect this week unless the Supreme Court intervenes. A new Texas law that would restrict abortions once a preborn child's heartbeat is detected is poised to take effect this week. But the abortion industry is making last-minute efforts to stall the legislation, including an emergency application asking the Supreme Court to take up the case. And by the way, this is where the rubber will meet the road, don't you think, when we find out a little bit more about Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Barrett, or Coney Barrett, I guess, some of the new members of the Supreme Court who were named by Donald Trump, three of them to be exact, and all three were touted as being pro-life. We're going to find out just how pro-life they really are. And I have my fingers crossed. I'm hopeful that they will actually step up and be pro-life when it gets down to it. In this case, if the Supreme Court decides to take it, could very well show us exactly what we want to know, one way or the other. The Texas Heartbeat Act was signed by Governor Greg Abbott in May and is set to take effect on September the 1st. That's today. It will restrict all elective abortions after a detectable heartbeat, which occurs as early as 6 weeks. The law is unique in that it allows private citizens to file lawsuits against someone implicit, I think she means complicit, in committing an abortion, including the doctor who performs it or the person who pays for it. Now, this is the interesting aspect of this new law, is the ability to bring a lawsuit with damages upwards of $10,000 in the case of an abortion. I don't think I've seen this kind of thing before, or if it's out there, I haven't noticed it. So the article says, as expected, abortion activists in the state were quick to pursue legal action to prohibit the law from taking effect. According to CNN, a district court initially scheduled a hearing for Monday to review the case after a lawsuit by the abortion industry. The Texas Tribune reports that more than 20 abortion providers hoped to persuade the courts to block the law during the hearing, but that hearing was canceled on Friday night by the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Seeing no other way to prohibit the law from taking effect, abortion proponents filed the emergency appeal with the Supreme Court of the United States, claiming that the law will immediately and catastrophically reduce abortion access in Texas. And that's the whole point, guys. That's exactly what we want this to do. But although not catastrophically, we want the catastrophe is what we're trying to stop. So the abortion people say it's a move, Texas Right to Life. It's a move. The article says it's a move. Texas Right to Life is calling pro-abortion groups last desperate option to try to block the law. In less than 2 days, Texas politicians will have effectively overturned Roe v. Wade. Nancy Northrup, president and CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights, said in a statement on Monday. She said, "We have filed an emergency motion with the Supreme Court to block this law before clinics are forced to turn patients away. Patients will have to travel out of state in the middle of a pandemic to receive constitutionally guaranteed health care." I don't think this is constitutionally guaranteed. I don't remember anywhere in the Constitution that it says you have a right to have an abortion. That's a Supreme Court decision. All of you constitutional lawyers, correct me if I'm mistaken on this issue, but I think that's a mischaracterization of the situation. I don't think that we have a constitutional right to wantonly take the innocent lives of unborn children. I don't remember reading that in the Constitution. In any case, so blah, 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 blah. And many will not have the means to do so. It's cruel, unconscionable, and unlawful. Despite these efforts by abortion proponents, Kim Schwartz of Texas Right to Life is confident the law will go into effect. It has gone into effect as of today. The Texas Heartbeat Act is the strongest pro-life legislation to pass the Texas legislature since Roe v. Wade, she said in an interview with the Texas Tribune. This is a huge victory and could save thousands upon thousands of preborn babies. We look forward to the day that it's going to be enforced, hopefully very soon. Right on. So that's a great way to start a Monday morning, isn't it? Today's not Monday morning, is it? Today's Wednesday morning. A stop with the mockery. I know. I was thinking Monday, first day of the week. It's the first day of the month.
The point is that it's great news. That's awesome. The takeaway here.
It is. And of course, the other side, they're beside themselves right now. And this gets back to something that we talked about in the run-up to the election. And just more importantly, as new justices were being named to the Supreme Court, three of them, amazingly, in the last 4 years. And the frenzy and the fury and the the implacable spittle-flecked efforts to try to block these nominees from getting on the Supreme Court. And as you've heard me say before, Cyrus, I believe it's all about abortion, because they want to keep Roe versus Wade at all costs. And the chance that maybe Roe versus Wade could be overturned, it's just they cannot imagine a world in which that could be true. So we're going to find out. I'm just putting that out there right now. Justice Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Gorsuch, those three, are going to let us know when the time comes, and I suspect it will come sooner rather than later, when a challenge is raised to this particular law in Texas. Now, either the Supreme Court could say, we're going to decline to hear that case. We're not going to hear it if it goes up the food chain. Or if they decide to hear it, that could be the beginning of the end for Roe versus Wade, if they were to rule in favor of this. So keep an eye on this situation. Keep an eye on what's going on in Texas. And by all means, keep an eye on the Supreme Court justices. We already know who will vote which way for the other ones, the ones that have been there before. Although Justice, what's his name? The Chief Justice, John Roberts. It's hard to say. He's kind of a wild card. Hard to say what he will do. But I'm very interested in seeing what the three new Supreme Court justices will do.
I like how you started this with juxtaposing how the for-profit media is reporting this. Mm-hmm. It's just another example of why relevant radio is so important.
Ain't it the truth? Because, well, I mean, we do have a bias. I'm biased in the direction of pro-life, and I know you are. So our biases are pretty available to see. But we don't shy away from reporting what the other side is saying, in their own words, for example, to let people see the difference.
Yeah, and that they're sneaking in this, you know, pregnant people are being turned away. Oh, these poor pregnant people are being turned away.
Oh, the humanity.
Yeah.
I don't think you can say humanity anymore because it has the word man in it. Oh, the
humaninity.
But you can't say that either because it has the word son in it. So maybe we have to junk that word,
it's
humanity. Maybe
so
we can't.
It's complicated.
Yeah, the rules are always changing. Anyway, yep. So hip, hip, hooray. I'm super excited about that. And Cyrus, maybe already by now, I haven't checked the Twitter feed, but if he hasn't already done so, he'll get a link to that article for you so you can see it and share it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Sally. I hope I'm saying the name right, in Los Angeles, California. Hi, Sally.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. I just had a really quick question for you. What are, I value your opinion highly. I think you're
Thank you.
Great. I took your advice about not giving my kids any cell phones. They're 11 and 12, although they're always
good
begging
for you.
Me, but I'm like, no.
Good for you. Gold star, Sally. Gold star for you. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I just wanted to pick your brain about some really good Catholic parenting books.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, there are any number of them out there. I'm partial to the books written by Steve Wood, who is a longtime friend of mine. He runs, the website for the organization he runs is called dads.org. So if you wanted to go peruse the books that he has there, he writes from the standpoint of a father and what dads can do to raise good, strong, well-adjusted, healthy Catholic kids. And he's written many books, so I would say start there if you're interested. Now, it's not just for fathers. There's a lot there for moms as well. And he may even have a couple of books that are actually geared for moms and dads both. But his website is dads.org, so check that out. I also recommend, this may not sound like what you're asking for, but I think it would help you with what you're doing, is I like the books that are coming out from, for example, St. Benedict Press. They have a series of new books on forming character, and there's one on just on parenting, and the author of the book happens to be the father of, I think they now have 12 children. He's like 15 years younger than me. But they have 12 children, I believe. He's the president of St. Benedict Press. And I took a look at that book. It just came out recently. And I'm blanking on the title. I'm sorry. But if you go to St. Benedict Press website, you'll be able to find it rather quickly. Connor Gallagher is the name of the author. And when I took a look at that book, I got a review copy in the mail. And I thought, this is good. I like what I see here. So I would take a look at that one. The other publisher I would suggest you take a look at would be Ignatius Press. And although I don't have any specific titles in mind, I do believe they have some very helpful books on raising kids as well. And their website is ignatius.com. Now, since you're speechless, I will tell you that I strongly recommend that you patronize your local Catholic bookstore whenever possible. And if you don't have a Catholic bookstore near you, then of course you can go to the websites. But I always like to support our Catholic bookstores whenever possible. I think, did we lose Sally?
Oh, I guess we did. Is that book? Yeah, we did.
Okay. Sally. It sounds like the connection dropped.
Will you repeat that? It was it Parenting for Eternity, A Guide to Raising Children by Connor
Gallagher? Yeah, that's the one.
Gallagher? Okay.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one. So, thank you. So if you can get that posted, Cyrus, that would be great.
I'll get it up there in just a sec.
Yeah, and that's new. And it hasn't been out more than maybe, I don't think it's been out for more than a month or so. So sorry that the connection dropped, Sally, but thank you. Let's go now to Andrew in Austin, Texas. Good morning, Andrew.
Hi, Patrick. Let me switch over to my phone. So my
great
headset.
Idea.
There we go.
Okay.
Yeah. So I am a lawyer. I'm not going to say I'm a constitutional lawyer per se, but of course we all have to take constitutional law.
Correct me,
was I
wrong in my opinion about the constitutionality of abortion?
No. This is one of those things, and I'm a person who has studied Roe v. Wade a lot. Both from a legal perspective and just because I'm Catholic and I'm pro-life. So what the Supreme Court did in the Roe v. Wade decision was ruled that the Constitution, although you are correct, absolutely correct, there are no words in the Constitution saying, thou have a right to abortion, right? That's very clear.
Right.
But what they did was they interpreted the Constitution to say it has a penumbra, which is kind of like an aura, if you will, that goes further than what the words say, which of course is never what the founders of the country intended, but nonetheless, it goes further than what the words say. And when you take the First Amendment with its, right to freedom of assembly and freedom of religion and freedom of speech, and you take the Fourth Amendment, which has the protection against unreasonable searches and seizures, and you kind of look at it and mix it all together, there's sort of this right to privacy that sort of pervades those amendments. And so we're going to say there's a right to privacy. And by the way, this is the same thing they used to strike down the laws that made using contraception illegal, the laws that made, sodomy illegal, the laws that made...
Griswold versus Connecticut, wasn't that the case on the contraception? Okay.
Correct. Very good. So that, they kind of decided that there's this penumbra. And so while the words are not in the Constitution, of course, the Supreme Court's job is to interpret the Constitution. And so by saying in Roe v. Wade that you have this right based on the words of the Constitution and their penumbra, you have this right to privacy, which includes the right for the government to not tell you whether you can have an abortion or not. So that's kind of how it came to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as much as it pains me to say so, I would say, right now, yes, it is a constitutionally protected right because the Supreme Court says it's in there, says it's in the Constitution, albeit I think it incorrectly, but.
Right. Didn't William Rehnquist, though, because he was on that court, and didn't he write the dissenting opinion in which he said this is ludicrous, that there is no such thing as a right to privacy anywhere in the Constitution. I remember reading at least part of his decision or his, his dissent from it. And he seemed to be like really on target that this was made up out of whole cloth. And it was the first time that it had ever been used, as I understand, as as a way to rule on something by ruling for a constitutional right to privacy. I mean, I need to go back and reread it, but I thought that was Rehnquist's whole point, was that this is actually fictitious.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I don't remember if it was Rehnquist necessarily, but you're right. I mean, the whole point of the dissent was, and I think it's sort of that slippery slope, you know, camel nose under the tent kind of thing, yeah. You know, that, mm-hmm. You know, if we're going to start inferring rights, you know, this is kind of dangerous, because now it becomes just a matter of getting five justices to agree a right exists, which yeah. is where we find ourselves today. Right. So
this is good stuff, Andrew. I'm glad you called in, and I'm glad you sorted me out a little bit on that issue. I'm glad of that. Thank you for that. Thank you for listening. I'll be right back with more right after this.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right, we're back. Hey, you know, I got to thinking during the break that I wanted to check on the dissenting opinions for Roe versus Wade, the terrible 1973 Supreme Court decision that effectively legalized abortion across the country with all of the horrible side effects that have flown from that. So the two dissenting justices on that court were Justices Byron White and William Rehnquist. And Rehnquist wrote an opinion, but it was White, I discovered, whose opinion got to the heart of the issue of, you know, where are you getting this right to privacy? So here is an excerpt from Justice White's dissent on the Roe versus Wade. He says, "I find nothing in the language or history of the Constitution to support the court's judgment. The court simply fashions and announces a new constitutional right for pregnant women." You notice he didn't say pregnant people, because nobody said that back then. He's referring here to the so-called right to privacy. Now, I say so-called. I believe we have a right to privacy, but within the context of Roe versus Wade, this was the essence of his dissenting opinion, as I understand it, and that is that you're asserting a constitutional right to privacy that the Constitution doesn't say anything about. And I understand the penumbra argument that our earlier caller shared with us, so that's helpful. So back to Justice White, dissenting. He says, "I find nothing in the language or history of the Constitution to support the court's judgment. The court simply fashions and announces a new constitutional right for pregnant women and, with scarcely any reason or authority for its action, invests that right, the right to privacy, with sufficient substance to override most existing state abortion statutes. The upshot," he says, "is that the people and the legislatures of the 50 states are constitutionally disentitled to weigh the relative importance of the continued existence and development of the fetus on the one hand against a spectrum of possible impacts on the woman on the other hand. As an exercise of raw judicial power, the court," and this is the Supreme Court deciding Roe versus Wade, "the court perhaps has authority to do what it does today, but in my view, its judgment is an improvident and extravagant exercise of power of judicial review that the Constitution extends to this court." Zing. By the way, that's a term I use on Twitter from time to time. If there's a particularly important article or something that I see that's important, I'll say zing. That's my response to it. And I've noticed other people now are starting to use that as well. That's great. I don't need to collect any royalties. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Allison in League City, Texas. Where in Texas is League City exactly?
Over by NASA.
Okay, so Houston, we've got a problem, that NASA?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Well, welcome aboard, Allison.
Good morning, Patrick, and good morning, Cyrus. So I have a very, very, very important question. I need your expertise as far as dealing with trauma on the prayer side. Now, mm-hmm. What I mean by that is, are you familiar with any novenas or besides the, you know, the go-to with St. Michael prayer?
Novenas for,
like
for specifically for what? Oh,
For trauma. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to rack my brain on that one, Allison. I don't know one off the top of my head. Is it like you're talking about physical trauma, sexual trauma, mental trauma, which I guess would fall under both of those, but any particular type?
Right. It would be physical trauma, mental abuse trauma.
Okay.
Not sexual trauma, but just for my children, trauma situations type thing, because without getting so deep into it, I put myself not knowing into a bad situation. Mm-hmm. And my children were affected by it. And because I haven't healed myself from it, say, you know, children are sponges.
Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't healed myself from it. And while I was pregnant with my third daughter, of course, she felt everything I felt. And then mm-hmm. after she was born, about 6 or 7 months after she was born, we found out she was very sick. So from her 6 months all the way up to her about first year, I was in and out of the hospital in the doctor's office with her. So I was taking care of a sick baby, mm-hmm. and I wasn't able to spiritually, mentally, and all that, take care of the trauma that we had gone through before I had her, mm-hmm. and focus on that. I had to focus on her. So now that everything is more or less copacetic and we're in this routine and she's in preschool now, I'm able to start focusing on the spiritual and mental and physical well-being of all of my children and myself.
Right.
I'd like to go ahead and start that process of healing.
Yes.
I'm
yes,
sorry.
Yes. No, don't be sorry. I can't imagine what you may have gone through and the toll it's taken on you, but it sounds as though things are getting better. I mean, you're moving forward, right? You're moving in a good direction.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm wondering, Allison, if maybe part of this is going to require maybe sitting down with a therapist, a Catholic therapist who can help you process all these emotions and channel them the way they're, you know, trained to do. Have you looked into that yet? Have you had any opportunities to do that yet?
You know, now that you mention it, I did start talking to a counselor, but in the process of doing that, you know, you kind of have to start to where you have to find the person that fits you best. And since I was a teenager, I've talked to several, you know, counselors and therapists and things like that, you know, for other things and things like that. But when I was a teenager, my parents were able to find me a Catholic therapist. But at the same time, you know, being a rebellious teenager, I always told myself, I'm just going to tell you what I know you want to hear.
Right.
So now as an adult, I need to go ahead and nothing against my counselor right now, but I feel like maybe a Catholic, because of the change that we've done this year since Lent, like I've told you before, we went ahead and started listening to Relevant Radio. So back in Lent, my children and I, so our prayer life has gotten so much more deeper and things like that.
That's great.
I feel like maybe a Catholic therapist would be, or a Catholic counselor even, would probably be a bit more helpful mm-hmm. with that. So that's actually my homework for the next few days as well.
Okay.
So, but I also wanted to see if maybe I've been wanting to talk to you since last Wednesday or Thursday, but you were doing emails, which I listened to as well.
Thank you.
I wanted to pick your brain about it and think maybe, oh, well, he might have a novena or something off the top of his head, but that's our go-to for St. Michael, our 911 for Jesus and St. Michael.
Yeah. Well,
I feel like that's our 911.
Mm-hmm. Well, gosh, there's so much I'd love to say. And if there were time, I would probably give you more recommendations than you would necessarily want. Have you ever done the novena to Our Lady Undoer of Knots? Have you heard of that one before?
No, I have not.
Okay. There's actually a book about that too. And I know that because my wife has it. I just don't remember the name of it. But if you look up the novena to Our Lady Undoer of Knots, and of course, the whole idea behind that is that this is an impossible situation. Whatever is going on, it's just impossible. It's unfixable. It's beyond repair. And these novenas have a way of miracles taking place. So I've seen a few things myself with this novena. So it's a 9-day novena, and you're asking for Our Lady's intercession and her help to help you resolve what seems to be maybe an irreparable situation, and she will help you. Now, it doesn't deal directly with trauma, per se, but that's certainly included. I mean, just think of all the people with all their problems. A lot of them will involve things similar to your own situation, whatever it was, whatever happened. So for healing of emotions, healing of memories, healing of relationships, restoration for your children, removal of whatever other problems may still be in your life, that's what this novena is intended for, is to help Our Lady walk some miracles into your life in situations that you don't see any way that you can fix them. I would suggest that one, honestly.
Okay. All right. I'll definitely look that up this evening.
Our Lady Undoer of Knots. Have you ever tried to undo a knot that's just impossible? You just cannot get that knot undone?
Yes.
We all have, right? And so what I picture in my mind's eye with regard to that particular novena is Our Lady just stepping forward with a sword and just cutting the knot. Done. Problem solved. And the knot just ceases to be a knot. I mean, there's an old story about Julius Caesar and the Gordian knot. I think it was Julius Caesar. Maybe I'm getting my people mixed up. But how the Gordian knot was a very heavy rope. It was tied into this massive knot. And it was said that whoever could untie that knot could become, you know, the head of the republic or the emperor. And so he just came in one day with a sword and he just cut it in half. So they made him the emperor. And I think it was Julius Caesar, but maybe it was somebody else. But I've always thought about that with regard to Our Lady's power. Really, it's God's power, of course, that he exerts through her. But she is a very powerful intercessor, as you know.
Yes. Yes. I named one of my daughters after her beauty, Mary's beauty, Maudie Bell.
So, oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for all of your help. I greatly appreciate it. And I greatly, very much thank you for all that you do for us and with your sidekick, Cyrus. So I'm going to go ahead and let you go. And thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Allison. I appreciate it. And all will be well. All will be well. And all manner of things will be well. Let's take a quick time out and we'll come right back with more of your phone calls right after this. The number to dial is 888-914-9149.
There's a line open, so now is your opportunity to ask Patrick a question by calling 888-914-9149.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
We are back. Hey, a sad story among many sad stories, tragic stories in Afghanistan. This has to do with an Afghan interpreter who helped rescue now President Biden. This is back in 2008, and he was there in Afghanistan on a helicopter that had to land in a snowstorm. And this man, Mohammed, they're not giving his last name for obvious reasons. He was his interpreter, and he helped rescue then Senator Joe Biden and another senator. I think it might have been John Kerry, in a fashion reminiscent of Genghis Khan, that Senator Kerry. So they were stranded in a remote Afghanistan valley after their helicopter was forced to land in a snowstorm. And this is an article in The Wall Street Journal. And now Mohammed is asking President Biden to save him. He says, "Hello, Mr. President, save me and my family." Mohammed, who asked that his full name not be used because they're in hiding, he told the Wall Street Journal, as the last Americans flew out of Kabul on Monday, "Don't forget me here." He and his wife and their four children are hiding from the Taliban after his years-long attempt to get out of Afghanistan got tangled in bureaucracy. They are among countless Afghan allies who were left behind when the U.S. ended its 20-year military campaign in Afghanistan. Or as I think Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, would say, Afghanistan. I think they have a way of saying it like Afghanistan. Where am I? The White House press secretary, Jen Psaki, thanked the interpreter for his service Tuesday and said the U.S. remains committed to getting Afghan allies out of the country. Mm-hmm. We will get you out, Ms. Psaki said. After a Wall Street Journal reporter read Mohammed's message to the president, we will honor your service, she said. Mohammed was a 36-year-old interpreter for the U.S. Army in 2008 when two U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopters made an emergency landing in Afghanistan during a blinding snowstorm, according to Army veterans who worked with him at the time. And as I mentioned, the senators, Biden and Kerry, were on board, as well as another senator, Chuck Hagel, Republican of Nebraska. As a private security team with the former firm Blackwater and U.S. Army soldiers monitored for any nearby Taliban fighters, the crew sent out an urgent call for help. At Bagram Airfield, Mohammed jumped in a Humvee with a quick reaction force from the Arizona National Guard working with the 82nd Airborne Division and drove hours into the nearby mountains to rescue them. Mohammed spent much of his time in a tough valley where the soldier said he was in more than 100 firefights with them. More than 100 firefights with the soldiers. The soldiers trusted him so much that they would sometimes give him a weapon to use if they got in trouble when they went into tough areas. His selfless service to our military men and women is just the kind of service I wish more Americans displayed, said Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Till. He wrote this in June to support Mohammed's application for a special immigrant visa. He was trying to get out of Afghanistan for a long time. It wasn't like he just ran up to the airport and got turned away in the days leading up to our final pullout. He was trying and trying and trying and trying, and nothing was happening. His visa application became stuck after the defense contractor he worked for lost the records he needed for his application. Then the Taliban seized Kabul on August the 15th. Like thousands of others, Mohammed said he tried his luck by going to the Kabul airport gates, where he was rebuffed by U.S. forces. Mohammed could get in, they told him, but not his wife or their four children. Army veterans, can you imagine, Cyrus, can you even imagine that choice that you're being forced to make? The soldiers say, okay, so we recognize that if you stay behind, the Taliban is, or Taliban, as so many people like to say now, the Taliban, they're going to be looking for you and all kinds of people like you. And it's a near certain death sentence. And sure, come on in, we'll get you out of here. But your wife and your children have to stay.
Nope.
Obviously. But can you imagine? I mean, that's just cruel.
Yeah.
To say you can come and your life will be spared, but your wife and kids have to stay behind. And of course, you want to survive and you don't want to get your head chopped off or get shot by the Taliban.
That's an evil choice.
It's an evil choice.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I don't know what else to say. It's evil to lay that on someone.
Yeah. Yeah, but he did the right thing. I mean, all I know about this man.
I guess he could have left, but.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about that guy played by Billy Zane in the movie Titanic. And by the way, there are a couple of bad scenes in the Titanic, so I'm not telling people go to watch that movie. I mean, my wife and I watched it with the fast forward remote control to zip through the bad scenes.
I never got to the end. How does it end?
I'm kidding. All right. So, Billy Zane, he plays that, you know, unscrupulous character. He's the husband of the main girl, whatever her name is, and
Rose.
Yeah. Right. So he's willing to throw anyone under the bus to get on one of those lifeboats. He'll sacrifice anybody, men, women, children, doesn't matter. I mean, that kind of guy would have said, okay, honey, I'll come back for you. I'll come back for you and the kids. I'm just going to get out for a while. That's all. That kind of guy would do it. But normal people like you would not do it. Good people.
It's not even an option.
No. But you're right. It is an evil choice to give someone like that. Yeah, sure. Come on. Your life will be safe, but no wife or children. Anyway, let's continue. So Army veterans called lawmakers and issued dire appeals to U.S. officials for help. If you can only help one Afghan, choose Mohammed, wrote Sean O'Brien, an Army combat veteran who worked with him in Afghanistan in 2008. He earned it, I'll say. During the 2008 presidential campaign, Mr. Biden, who was then running for vice president, often spoke of the helicopter incident and the trip as a way of burnishing his foreign policy credentials. He said on the campaign trail, he says, if you want to know where Al-Qaeda lives, you want to know where Osama bin Laden is, come back to Afghanistan with me. He said on the campaign trail, and this is just after he was rescued that February. This is 2008. Come back to the area where my helicopter was forced down in the middle of those mountains. I can tell you where they are. A trip to Afghanistan was one of the many overseas trips the three senators took together. Their Army helicopter's emergency landing in a valley about 20 miles southeast of Bagram Airfield wasn't in an area that was Taliban controlled, but it wasn't exactly friendly. The day before, the 82nd Airborne had killed nearly two dozen Taliban fighters in a major fight about 10 miles away, etc., etc., etc. So the whole point of this is that this guy is twisting in the wind, and he has to, you know, who knows what cave he's hiding in with his wife and his children, because the Taliban are after him, and all the more so, I suppose, because this is big news. I mean, look at us. We're talking about it right now. And I don't know if, you know, El Presidente, I don't know if President Biden, and don't get on my case, everybody, because I say El Presidente. I've never understood why that irks some people. It's just Spanish for the president, okay? Ease up. I don't know if he's aware of this specifically. Maybe he is, maybe he's not. But come on, guys, do the right thing. Figure out a way to get this guy out. You know, send some SEALs in there. I'm sure we've got plenty of those people there already right now. I mean, look at me, an armchair quarterback. I don't know what goes on and how what all has to happen, but if we can save Private Ryan, we can save Muhammad, right? Can't we, Cyrus? We can do that, huh?
What happened to no one left behind?
No child left behind.
Okay.
You got to get your slogan straight.
Yeah, I say no one left behind.
Yeah, and there is no such thing as pregnant people. It's only pregnant women.
Fact,
yeah. No, I'm deeply saddened, and I'm concerned for this man, and who knows what will happen, but maybe in your prayers, everybody, just remember this man and his family. He helped save Joe Biden when he was forced to land in a snowstorm in Afghanistan. I think that deserves a little bit of credit.
I would think so. I think I heard on the news this morning, President Biden was saying 9 out of 10 people that want out of Afghanistan have gotten out. I'm like, that's not enough.
No,
nine out of ten people have gotten out.
Insane. 9 out of 10 people who want out of Afghanistan got out.
So 1 out of every 10 people got left behind.
So we removed the. So I don't know what the population of Afghanistan is, but let's assume 30 million. So what did we take? We got
okay.
20
Americans then. Americans.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
I don't buy it either. And it's not enough. Even if it is, that's 10%.
Right. So let's say there were 20,000. Well, you know, we got 18,000. You know, the other 2,000, they will of course meet a grisly end. But yeah, we got. Right. 90% out.
We shut the world economy down for 0.0001%. Of the people that get, you know, very, very sick and die.
You're getting COVID-y now.
Oh, sorry.
All right.
Yep. I need to stop. I'm back. I'm going back into the shadows, Patrick. Bye.
I like it when your energy level increases like that. That's good. 888-914-9149. Excuse me. Let's go to Mark in Minnesota. Was it Alexander the Great, Mark?
Yes, it was.
All right. You got me. I said Julius Caesar. I was befuddled.
Well, I had the advantage of taking a class in college, Alexander the Great and the Hellenistic World, taught by a great Jesuit classicist, Frederick Schlatter.
No.
I don't remember a lot of it, but I remember that.
It's a great story, isn't it?
It is. And now the question I have, which I'll have to research further, is the actual city was Gordium, ending IUM. But it's somehow taken the name or the spelling Gordian, I-A-N.
Interesting.
So I'll have to figure that out.
I didn't know that. So the Knot was named after the city, and it was this huge, I've seen, like, you know, pictures of it. No, nobody knows exactly what it looked like, but this just huge balled up knot of like a heavy rope, impossible to undo. And many people tried to do it and they couldn't do it. It's almost like the story of the sword and the stone, right? You know, where whoever can pull the sword out of the stone becomes the king. And he went in with the sword and he just chopped that knot in half, and he became, you know, the ruler.
And the other thing is, I don't think most of us are aware or think to ask, how did this knot manifest itself? What was it tied to, or what did it tie together? And I've just discovered a portrait or a painting by Giovanni Panini in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. It shows a chariot and the yoke, the part that projects out, and the horses would be connected to the yoke. Mm-hmm. It's at the end of a yoke to a chariot. So,
oh, interesting. I need to go back and revisit that, you know, classical literature, and reread that or look it up online, I guess. But thank you for getting that clarified for me. I when I said Julius Caesar, I was thinking to myself, that doesn't sound right, but I can't think of who else it was. So you get the blue ribbon this morning.
I was surprised you got it wrong. I really was. I thought you'd be right on top of that. So,
well, but I'll try to do better next time.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. Yeah, I always enjoy furthering or adding to my storehouse of knowledge, especially when it's correct information. Let's go to Dave in Poinette, Michigan, or Wisconsin, excuse me. Hi, Dave.
Yes, Wisconsin. Hey, good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We've talked a couple times previously about the mark of the beast and whether it was going to be physical or not.
Okay.
I think I've come around to agreeing with you now, and I'll tell you why. I was originally just coming at it from a technological and economic standpoint, where I think, I still think the biometric and social credit score are the inescapable, you know, part of the prison. But I think, you know, there has to be a serious spiritual component to this mark. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if maybe at some point the animosity towards Christianity is going to get to the point where, you know, it'll take a form of persecution where we'll have to have a mark put on us that says in words or by symbol somehow that I reject my faith, or I renounce Jesus, or something to that effect. You know, what do you think about that? I mean, won't it have to be some kind of seriously sinful rejection of the Lord?
Right. I'm with you. And, you know, just looking at Revelation 13 and Revelation 14, it seems to me that the subtext to getting the mark is that you are willing to worship the beast or the image of the beast. And so that would be, by definition, a rejection of Jesus if you worship, you know, a false god. So, yeah, I think you're right. What form that would take, I'm not sure. I don't know if it would be, you know, like an overt rejection of Christ. It seems like if you were to accept the mark of the beast, knowing that doing this entailed that you had to, in some way, say that you worship the beast so that you could buy groceries and such, that in itself would entail a rejection of Christ. But whichever, I mean, it sounds pretty horrible if you ask me, but that sounds like you're on the right track to me.
Right, yeah, and you know, that story you just went over about the Texas abortion law, I mean, things like that are going to throw fuel on this fire against Christianities and Catholics, you know. So, I mean, now I see it. There has to be a serious sinful component to it. And I think for that reason, it'll be a mark that'll just be to persecute Christians.
Let me ask you this question, since you're contemplating these weighty matters.
Okay.
What is your sense of what's going on right now with regard to the scapegoating of people who are refusing to get vaccines, or at least they're hesitating? There's a lot of scapegoating going on. It's reminiscent of the way in which the Jews or other minorities would be scapegoated early in the campaign that ultimately led up to horrible things. You know, we're not at that level now. Here's my sense.
Oh,
I'd like to know what you think. I would guess that the majority of Americans who are resisting getting vaccinated are Christian. I'm pretty confident there are probably not that many atheists. And I don't know what to say about, say, Muslims or other non-Christian religions. But if I had to guess, I'd say the majority of those who are resisting the vaccine are Christians. And maybe it will morph into just something more directly anti-Christian. What do you think?
I agree. I think the herd mentality is getting to a scary point, you know, like Hitler's Germany. And it is mainly, like you say, faithful people, I think, that are, you know, maybe their intellects haven't been darkened yet. So, you know, I do agree with you on that, that, you know, it probably is more Christian people that are looking over the tall grass at this. But, you know, I just think the herd mentality is getting so dangerous that it really is a scary time to be living. If I didn't have my faith, I don't know what I'd be doing right now.
Yeah. I guess for me, and thank you, Dave, this is a great time to be alive. It's a great time to be a Catholic. We were made for times like this. And that's why we're here, in any case, is to help other people get to the lifeboats. Thank you, Dave. Great talking to you. I'll be right back.